Hey, it's Wendy. I'm back with a new podcast episode today. And in fact, I'm here with a whole entire podcast series. And this series is going to be one where I interview all of the new instructors that are going to be instructors in Fodder School 3. And I'm really excited to bring this to you because everyone has a story and I can't wait to tell all of their stories. So without further ado, I bring you today's podcast episode. Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up, a podcast about prolific makers, specifically in the world of mixed media art. I'm your host, Wendy Solganic, also known as Willa Wanders, and I'm here to explore the ups and sometimes the downs of being a prolific mixed media artist. I've been a maker my entire life, and I've had four, yes, four separate careers involving art. In each episode, we'll talk to artists about how they became prolific makers, why they make art, and the struggles they go through. We'll talk about being an online creative, social media, and how to navigate that world if that's what you're into. Whether you're a casual art lover of mixed media art and collage, or a serious artist making a living with art, whether you're a handmade book artist, an art journaler, a 3D assemblage creator, a fiber artist, a collage artist, or everything all at once, I hope you'll join me on this journey into the world of mixed media making. If you like this podcast, hit the subscribe button and leave a review. You can find me, Wendy, at willowanders.com and on Instagram at willa.wanders and at fodder.school.
Hey, Keisha.
Hi, Wendy.
So we just pressed the record button and immediately I was telling Keisha about my anxiety around tech and how I'm using all this new tech to do this recording and how it just makes me super anxious. And Keisha was like, don't even talk to me about tech anxiety. And I don't know what it is, if it's because we have this artistic personality or because we are of an age group where tech is just, it doesn't come natural to me in any way. So tell me just right off the bat, Keisha, tell me why tech makes you anxious.
I like tech. I love to all these new things. But this is what I tell everybody. At my age, so I'm going to be 60 next September, I'm at a gigabytes in my brain.
Yes.
There's no more room left.
And there's no more room left.
Yeah. So with everything constantly changing, you have to keep keeping up with it and you just get used to something. And the next thing you know, it's changed again. And I think, too, as we get older and my eyesight especially has really declined in a very upsetting way for me, that I'm visually like, OK, this was in this spot. Where is it? And they've moved it. And then now you got to go look for it and figure it out. And that's what it makes me anxious. Like, where is it? Where is it? I don't know where to find it now.
Oh, my gosh. You just brought up so many really good points. Also, my eyesight is changing and it's like I'm having a hard time seeing things that used to be easy to see before. Right. But and also the point of reading is just changing so rapidly.
Yes.
And I just don't even understand how this is okay for human beings to withstand this level of rapid change. I don't know.
I would like to have a five-year-old move in next door to me so that I could just hire him to do all my stuff because they pretty much know how to do everything now,
yep.
No matter what the age is. So I'm like, okay.
I'm lucky because I have a 15-year-old son who still lives with me. And if it wasn't for him, I would never have been able to do the tech setup that I have for this podcast right now. He's the one who got all the equipment plugged together and working.
Yeah. See, I don't have access to anyone.
That's really
so frustrating.
Hard. Yep. Yeah. Really hard. Okay. Well, let's do a little bit of a formal introduction here.
Okay.
So today on Show Up or Shut Up, we have Keisha Devaney. And Keisha, let us know right off the bat where people can find you on Instagram so that they have a reference point for the type of art that you make.
Okay. It's definitely my name, Keisha Devenny. And it's K-E-C as in Charlie, I-A. And Devenny is D-E-V as in Victor, E-N-E-Y. And I think it's all smushed together. Keisha Devenny.
Okay. And is Devenny an Irish name?
So, of course, it's my husband's last name, and I don't know.
Oh, gotcha.
I think it's like French Canadian, I want to say.
Oh, okay. What's your maiden name?
My maiden name is Crazy with an F. So, of course, I was called Keisha Crazy growing up. That was always fun. But I think that's French.
And it was with an F, Crazy?
Yeah, F as in Frank. F-R-A-Z-E-E.
Wow. That's an awesome way of saying it. But what a bummer that people teased you about it.
Okay. Oh, of course. Keisha Crazy. It's a perfect match.
So why do you think they did that? Was it because you were really artistic as a kid?
So I would think, yeah. But at the time, I didn't really know that. And I think people just saw me as weird. So I think when we were talking about the 70s and the late mid-70s, early 80s. So times back then were all about being part of the clique. And I was just always like my beats my own drum and just my own person. So that was weird. And then also I moved around a lot because I grew up in the military. I was a Navy brat. And so you're constantly reintroducing yourself to people and they already have their established friends. And then you kind of get that, oh, she's so weird. And they don't even know who I am. Or because I was very quiet, I was more of an observer. Oh, she's conceited. So yeah, I've heard it all growing up, but it's definitely, she's just so weird. And I think, and what I say now though, is that weird isn't it black. Because yeah. I'd rather be weird and interesting than like dull and boring. So,
we could say that tech is advancing so fast that it may not be great for society, but there are certain advances in human relations that are positive for society. And one of them is the acceptance of differences, which has really grown a lot since we were kids.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Sure. Nerdiness is accepted. Weirdness is accepted. I mean, all the differences are just much more accepted. So that's a huge positive.
So I think it's really interesting because, of course, now he's my son. So I have two sons. So Tucker's the one that stays home with us. And then I have my other son, Dylan, who lives in Seattle. And he calls himself a nerd. And he's like the least nerdy person I would know. But I think it's interesting that he and his friends kind of consider themselves nerdy.
Because maybe, like you said, being different, being nerdy, it is totally acceptable now.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like you want to be nerdy. That's where that's where the coolness is. That's where all the advancements in society are. That's where all the wealth is being created is by really nerdy people. So maybe it's like people want to align with that more.
Yeah. I mean, and he's definitely in the field of gaming and all that stuff, which is the creative. That's the creative aspect. He's a creative writer. So yeah, but I was just kind of surprised that they labeled themselves in the nerdy class because I don't look at any of them and think you guys are nerds. So.
Oh, interesting. So, so you were moving around a ton as a child. When did you discover that you were, I would say, an extreme creative? Because you are definitely, even amongst creatives, I would say, kind of an outlier.
So it's funny, though, when I was in school, high school and college stuff, I never took any art classes. I had never really tapped into that. And I'm not sure why. I think I was more on the, I mean, back then it was like you kind of were just doing what you were told to do. You know what I'm saying? And I think I really started exploring art when I moved to New Jersey, which would have been 1995. And in December, and we actually moved into our house in the middle of a snowstorm, and it was a very snowy winter. And my kids were little, I'd say 3 and 5. And I didn't know anyone. I'm from the West Coast, so I didn't know anyone except for my mother-in-law. But we're trapped inside during the winter. I have nothing to do. I don't know what to do with myself. And so I just started doing decoupage, which is something me and my sister used to do for fun. Like we just take paper napkins and collage a basket or decoupage a basket. It's kind of collaging now, but back then.
Oh, yeah. The origins of what fodder school really is in many ways.
So I just kind of fell back on that. And I think I'd gone to a thrift store and I found like this really cool old dresser, very eclectic in what I like to decorate with. So I found this interesting little dresser thing and I'm like, I'm going to decoupage it with these napkins. And basically, you spent the whole winter, anything that I could decoupage, I did. And that included like all the steps going up to my upstairs. And so I just really kept busy that way. And
wait, hold on. You decoupaged the stair risers or the steps that you actually step
the
on?
Rise, so riser.
The risers. That's extreme decoupaging. What was your husband thinking? My wife is decoupaging our stairs.
He's very, very easygoing with whatever I want to do. So I'm very, very happy about that. He's very supportive of all my ideas. And yeah, there's 13 steps and it took me a while and I would just do a step and then sit on the next step and do that step and then go up. And yeah, I'll have to post a picture of my steps. But it was just such a great way to occupy that time instead of I'm not the type of person that I can just be like a mom for all my hours or someone who works 9 to 5 all my hours. I have to have a lot of different stuff happening to me in order to feel content, if that makes sense. So finding
makes
this
outlet.
Yeah. So like an outlet. Yeah. Let's just call it an outlet. So finding this outlet of just gluing stuff to my steps and furniture and stuff like that. I just found such a relief in it. It was just making me so happy and just kind of snowballed from there. I found some magazines at Barnes and Nobles and discovered altered art. So it was called altered art back in the day before really mixed media came into play. And just started making things that they were like, oh, why don't you make this? And I'm like, oh, that looks really fun. And then I started making gifts. And then someone's like, you should do shows. And so I did a couple of shows. And then I ran into someone. She's now my friend. But she's, did you know they have retreats on how to do this stuff? And I'm like, what? And so I actually looked and found a retreat to go to and started taking some classes and just really opened my eyes to what was out there and what the possibilities were. And one of the things that when I was doing all my art and stuff like that, I always thought I was so, here's the word again, weird. I'm not following any rules. I didn't go to art school. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm having fun. And then taking those classes, it was like, opened my eyes that guess what? You don't really have to follow rules and you're not weird because you're just doing your own thing. And so it just really snowballed from there. And I made the decision, well, I don't really want to take classes anymore. I just want to teach them because I just feel so excited about what I do. So long story short, that's what sort of happened.
So do you remember approximately what year it was that you discovered that, oh my gosh, there's classes, like people are having whatever they are, workshops in hotels or convention centers, like that this is actually a thing? When was that?
Early 2000s, maybe 2003 or 4 or 5-ish.
And who, do you remember who your teachers were?
Gonna blank on her name. It was when soldering started getting really popular.
Okay.
And she had a book and she sort of disappeared since then. I'm blanking on her name.
So were you making things with metal? Was that like a big part
of
what you
were doing? No, it was bringing glass pieces together and it's stained glass work. But so it's like a stained glass work, but more mixed media. So basically taking two pieces of glass and putting copper foil over them. And then you use your soldering iron and solder and then run a seam through it and then put on a jump ring. And now you have an ornament or something to hang. People were making jewelry and doing the same thing with rocks. And so, yeah, it was really cool. I really got really interested in that. And I taught that for quite a long time. And then it's a lot of work, though. So I was just like, I might be done with this. And not, what else do I want to do?
And so how does that feeling of I might be done with this, what else can I do? How does that happen for you? Like, is it just like you open yourself up and suddenly an idea pops in your head, or are you looking at magazines and books and saying, what am I feeling when I'm looking at these things? Open us up to your kind of creative journey.
Yeah, I think, first of all, for me, I get bored quite easily. And so I do like to jump around in different things. I might be painting for a while, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sick of this. And so I'm like, oh, I want to sew now for a little bit. So it definitely has to do with tapping into that. This is boring me. I really can't do things. What's the word? Just consecutive, do the same thing over and over again. That's not built into me very well. And so, yeah, I was probably like seeing something like, oh, that looks cool. Or maybe I was at a store and saw something like, oh my God, how'd they do that? That's so interesting. And then I might go home and look it up and be like, oh my gosh, I want to learn that. And thank God for YouTube, because you can find so many interesting things on there and then start to explore them in your own way.
So, do you think that part of the boredom comes when you feel like you've mastered something? So it's like that, like part of maybe why you create the kind of art you create is because there is so much challenge in it, and so much part of your process is researching and discovering and trying new things and seeing what works and doesn't work. And that once you know exactly what works and doesn't work and you've achieved the result you're looking for, is that the point where it becomes a little boring?
I would probably think that's a good guess. I never thought about it that way, but I would think that's a good guess. But I do like to go back. I look at it as like a schedule. Okay, for probably the next 3 months, I'm going to spend time sewing. I want to sew. And then I'm like, all right, I think I'm ready to do some painting, or maybe I just want to do some clay work. So yeah, I mean, and it's funny though, if I've mastered something, but then I go back to it after I haven't done it for a while, say my dolls, I always, the first two dolls, I just mess them all up. Because I'm like, how come I can't remember how to do that? So I think it's kind of funny.
The reason I brought that up is because I've noticed that in myself, that things are really fun and exciting when they're new and I'm discovering. And then when I feel like I've mastered something, it can totally lose its power to draw me back into it.
Right.
And so I'm always balancing the sadness of moving on with the fact that I know that moving on is probably the thing that's going to keep me excited longer. Like, just even within fodder school, being on these 1 month cycles, I'm always at the peak of my excitement about whatever we're doing when we're forced to move on.
Right.
And well,
I think that's probably why a lot of people start projects but don't finish them, because the excitement is in the beginning of a project. And once it gets set aside, it's kind of like, I don't really want to get back to that.
Yeah. I mean, what I end up doing, which is exactly what I'm doing right now, is I'm making way too much of whatever we're making this month. And I mean, when we're recording this, it's June and we have our lessons with Karen Elaine, and I've made way too much. And I know that I'm already making multiples of the project, and then I'll set about making so much of the material that I can make multiples, but then the end of the month comes and I have to move on, and I've never finished all the multiples of the So I usually do make a lot more than one. I usually make many of everything, but I make enough materials and I'm really excited and I can really make a lot, and then I'm forced to move on. And I'm sad that I have a box full of materials left over from that month's project. But at the same time, I have to recognize that what keeps me so excited about it is the fact that I am pushed to doing something new all the time.
Right. Yeah.
And
that's a lot. I really hadn't thought of it like that. A project.
Yeah, because you might get, like, we did 1 month where we did wax collages. And I loved it so much. And when I look at my pieces, I look at them longingly. I just want to go back and make more wax collages.
Right.
But I have to keep, because I'm the leader of this thing.
Yeah.
I have to keep up with it. But honestly, that's what keeps me so excited about it. So I have to just take the good with the bad.
Right.
I have to move on.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's go back to when you started decoupaging all over your stairs. And then you started taking classes. What has the professional journey been like for you? Because it sounds like at this point, you're doing this and it's 100%. You're doing it for fun. You're exploring. You're a bored mom. You want to keep your time busy. At what point and how does it come to you that you're like, oh, actually, I like this so much. I want to do a show. And then tell me all about the show process, because I know that that's a big thing that a lot of artists consider doing and try doing. And I've tried. I've dipped my toe in that water and kind of jumped back out. Wow, this is a lot of work. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. And because it was just me and my husband and then my older son, Tucker, who is very special needs, disabled in a wheelchair, I have to do pretty much everything on my own because someone has to be with him. So it's not like I could say, okay, honey, can you come help me? So that's not how it ever worked. And so, yeah, doing it all by yourself, because like I said, I don't have family out here. I just had my mother-in-law. Doing everything by myself, the setup and doing just putting it back down and packing it up, and it was very tiring and not worth all the work that went into it. And I would say maybe because it's this area, because I know that some artists live in great areas and have these awesome shows, and it's not really like that around here. And I live down at the shore in New Jersey, and so it's definitely a beach vibe. I'm not sure that mixed media stuff is kind of catching their attention, because I would just hear things like, oh, that's interesting, or oh, just comments that they just ain't get it.
There might be neighborhoods in Los Angeles where it would be the totally, like, your art would be like gobbled up. I could see areas in LA, like Silver Lake and stuff, where they just love
living at the shore. And trying to sell mixed media artwork is not the right place for me, for sure.
Right. Because your art is kind of avant-garde.
Yeah. It's people, I think maybe 1 out of 10 people would really be like, oh, what is this? This is so interesting. And then the other 9 were like, whatever. And then even like galleries, there's not really galleries around here because it's all beach towns. So I have to compete with sand dollars and seashells for the stuff that is beach art. And so yeah, definitely the area is not conducive to selling my art. And I started to recognize that pretty quickly. And I think the last show I did, I commandeered my younger son to go with me, and it poured awful. And I didn't have a tent, because how am I going to put up one of those big tents by myself? So I didn't have a tent, and you weren't supposed to leave the show, and it was raining so bad. And so there were some guys across from me selling that lived like a couple houses down, and they went and got me all these tarps. And then we put it all up, and I was making the joke that, like, yeah, my ghetto stand, because it just looked really ghetto. And people would come in, and but it just started raining so hard that we were taking umbrellas and trying to tap the water off the top of the tarps. Oh my God. So we finally were like, let's just pack up, because at that point my artwork was getting all wet. And
Oh my God.
I told my son, like, okay, we're done. That's it. I'm done. I'm done with this.
Done with this. So then what happened after that? After you were like, yeah, I'm not doing the show thing. I don't live in the right area for my art.
Yeah. I think I just started concentrating more on just teaching. Because then you'd go to these retreats and I could bring my artwork. And then there's always a vendor night. And you could sell your artwork in the classroom and sell your artwork in the class during class and stuff like that. So that was a 2-for-1. Made it a little bit easier to sell my artwork that way as well.
So how often were you teaching? Because at this point, you're in the mid-1990s. There's no online school.
I would say more at this point, we're talking like 2010, 2011, 12, getting into a little mid 2000s at that point.
So before you started teaching, after you did the shows and you were like, okay, this isn't for me, but before you started teaching, were you just at home making art for yourself?
I started making jewelry, and I would post things on Facebook and usually sell them on Facebook.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I made jewelry for quite a long time with found objects. Like, I'd go to the flea market and find interesting things. And then I'd use my soldering skills to combine these things together and make really very unique, very one of a kind pieces. And so I did that for quite a long time. And then some people would be like, oh, can you show me how to do that? And so I did start having some teaching in my home with soldering. I did that for a little bit. And then I just got to the point where my younger son was getting ready to graduate high school, and I knew he was going to go off to college, and I was really getting burned out on jewelry. And plus, at that point, the craft stores were really coming out with stuff that were mimicking found objects. And so now everyone. They could just go to Michael's and make their own sort of found object necklace sort of thing. And I was just So I'm like, I think I need to move on. I need to find a new niche. My son's going to college. I'm going to be very devastated about this. And I need to start preparing for the emotional fallout that I know that's going to come with that, because my younger son is our outside attachment to the real world as far as normalcy goes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
And we just adore him. He just, the poor kid was smothered to death with love, which is a good thing. But I mean, I'm sure he was like, get me out of here. But I knew that I just would be so, so devastated when he left. And so I just really had to prepare for that. So I did spend about 3 years when he was a sophomore getting ready for that and figuring out, starting to teach more and just really starting to do my own thing and finding a niche and that kind of stuff.
So I'm at that place in my life where I'm starting to have to really think about what is my life going to be like when my middle child leaves, because she brings a lot of energy into the home.
Yes, exactly.
And being someone who works from home, and I also have a special needs child, but not the kind of homeboundness that you experience, but
yeah,
it's got its challenges.
Right.
I'm also in a place where I have to figure out, okay, how am I going to engage with the outside world a lot more? Because it won't be just happening in my space.
No.
Like last night, my daughter, she always has friends over here, and she had a big group of friends over here, and we watched the movie Risky Business, and we had so much fun.
No.
And it's not in my 50s. They're all 18 years old.
Yeah.
But I love being a part of their fun as much as they allow me to be a part of their fun.
Yeah. No, that's what I miss so much with my son Dylan being gone, and now he's like on the West Coast, and so we only see him very little anymore. And I just miss that kind of stuff.
So how did you transition? How did you find that feeling of connectedness for yourself with him and his friends being gone?
Yeah, I had to build my own life away from his. And so I did that by teaching and really creating a big online presence with Facebook first, and having people like my work and like who I am and like what I have to say. I don't just post about my art. I post about what's going on. With Tucker shows up occasionally. We take care of a lot of animals outside, a lot of rescues, and then we have rescues inside. And then I do the gardening thing. And so that's all a part of who I am. And so they feel very connected to that. And it's kind of nice. It is my support system. And there are a lot of us out there that are housebound for whatever situation and don't really have a lot of connections to the outside world. And so it's kind of, I guess, how I built my virtual family, so to speak, I guess.
So do you feel like having a virtual family fills you up enough? Or how often are you getting to teach? Because that's an interesting thing. That's a great way to connect with other people. But if you go off to teach at a workshop, especially if you're flying somewhere, you'd have to find coverage who's taking care of your son. So that's really difficult.
Yes. And usually of course, this is pre-COVID, because since COVID, I haven't taught live yet. I've only done online. But pre-COVID, I would know the dates that were arranged, and most of them are arranged almost a year in advance of what's going to happen. And so I would have plenty of time to get everything, all my ducks in a row for myself and for at home with Tucker.
Gotcha. So you had plenty of time to get coverage for him.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, are you looking for more opportunities to teach live?
Yes and no. It really has to be the right thing. Like international teaching does interest me because I love to travel and I love to see new places. To have to go down to, I don't know, some random place that's going to either require me to drive or fly and spend all this money, I'm not sure that really interests me anymore, because most places do not pay any of your expenses to get out there.
Right. So that's becoming an issue, I think, for unfortunately for for the people who host these live in-person events.
Yeah.
because it's up to the teacher to pay their travel expenses. And it's so expensive to fly somewhere and then put yourself up in a hotel.
Yes. And then bring all this stuff. You have to spot everything. And a lot of them are like, well, we want you to bring all the stuff and supply everything for your students at your cost.
Right. And that's
that's money adds up quickly.
Yes. So it's really sad and unfortunate. It really is that we are definitely, look, I'm not going to say I don't love online classes because I sure as hell do.
Yeah.
But I also see huge value in being together and making art. And one of the things that I've been trying to do in Cleveland is to have some type of regular crafternoon where it was kind of like an open thing where people can just come and make whatever craft they want.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really hit a like great point where we have a good location and people are really committed to it. And I'm not sure if it's ever going to be something that I can pull together, but I know that for my soul, I need to be creative in community with other people live and in person regularly.
I know a lot of people locally would like to see me teaching classes, but it's just, okay, well, I'm not going to have it in my home anymore, especially after COVID, because I have to be so careful with Tucker. But trying to find something in this area at the Jersey Shore that's affordable and doesn't require a lease, it's not happening.
Right.
But if I could find something that I could rent for a weekend that was semi-affordable, that would work out great, but it's just hard to find. I mean, I've looked at the VA, it's not the VA, but whatever they're called, those lodges and...
Yeah.
Even those were quite expensive. It really shocked me. Firehouse is very expensive. So.
Wow. Wow, wow. So interesting.
Yeah.
So right now, is it basically online teaching opportunities?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's how we ended up finding you for fodder school.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to be an amazing fodder school teacher.
Well, I appreciate your patience.
I totally get it. We're patient because I'm not a spring chicken myself. So we know about all the trials and tribulations of working through everything. And we try to be the best communicators we can be, but we know that it takes a lot of patience on everyone's part to pull fodder school together. So there's going to be, I have to think about, usually it's like, the questions are flowing out of me and I've been looking at your Instagram page while we're talking and the breadth of your work is so deep. I'm looking at these gorgeous weavings, all these three-dimensional objects. What would you say has been your favorite thing, like your favorite series, I guess, not single object, but all the different things you've made. What would you say is your favorite?
I really like making dolls. And I'm not sure why, because I really didn't play with dolls when I was growing up. And it's not like these are like play dolls. So they're art dolls. But it's not like I've always loved dolls. So I'm not quite sure what my fascination, I'd love to know the psychology behind it, but what my fascination with taking something. So if you begin with fabric and it's flat, and then you start to add dimension. And that's definitely a key thing for me is I need dimension and texture in my work. I just find flat does not do it for me. So I just always have to like level up and be extra is what I call it. So I do love to make dolls. And I even include like sculpture dolls as a doll. So there's something about manifesting and bringing a flat thing to life for me. And I don't know if it has anything to do with the trauma of what happened to Tucker, the loss of what happened to Tucker. So I don't know. That's what I'm talking about with the psychology of it. I think it would be really interesting to explore. Am I recreating loss? I don't know, but I absolutely love it. It's my favorite thing to do. And it's my favorite thing to explore. And not just with fabric. I have.
Yeah, I've seen like every material, like you put every material in to create these three-dimensional effects.
I have this doll that I've been working on that started as a picture frame that someone gave me. And the picture frame, I think, is Mexican because it's like a little church, if that makes any sort of sense. And it has a little opening in the center. So it's a niche sort of picture frame thingy. But I never really knew what to do with it. And it was outside for a long time and it got really rusty. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I brought it in. I'm like, oh my God, that's a body right there. That's a doll's body. And so I began to build it up from there. And that to me is back to that excitement we were talking about. A lot of troubleshooting. How can I make her more interesting? How am I going to make her feet fit her because she's a photo frame? How am I going to put a head on this? You know what I mean? So
wow.
That whole sort of research and troubleshooting is a big part of that excitement for me. And always just, I don't like this. Why am I not liking it? Exploring what I like, what I don't like. If I don't like something, how can I change it to make it so I do like it? So yeah, it's a really unique process for me. And
I'm just getting to the point in your Instagram feed where I'm seeing a video of your kitchen.
No.
So people should definitely look at your Instagram feed and they should scroll back because there is just a lot that you are doing in your home with art. And your art definitely had I hope I'm not saying the wrong thing here, but I couldn't verbalize it till you just mentioned something. So remember when you were talking about how your art doesn't really have a market in the town that you live in?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, your art would sell really well in Los Angeles in a place like Silver Lake. And there was something about your art that was just bringing up memories for me of when I lived in Los Angeles. And now I know exactly what it is. Yeah. Your art has, I think this is what it is. It's a Mexican, there's overlap with the type of art that is like Day of the Dead art.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you talk about that? Because now that I'm looking at your kitchen and the painted surfaces in your kitchen, it totally reminds me of the type of art I was seeing when I was living in Los Angeles.
So I absolutely love Mexico. I love to travel there. I love to go there. I love the culture. I love to explore it. I love their whole openness about Day of the Dead and not shunning death and just celebrating the lives and the whole stories. There's a lot of folklore to be explored, which I feel like in America, there's not a lot of that. There's a lot of culture. And especially where I live down at the Jersey Shore, there's not a lot of culture. So the culture and that richness of the stories is very attractive to me. And I do like to convey in all my art some sort of story. So yeah, that's a huge presence. And that's why also traveling is because number one, it is an escape from your home life, but it's a chance to just open your eyes to things that are very inspiring. And so I often come back. I mean, right now, my only source of traveling is to go every Friday to the flea market. And that's not very far. It's 5 miles. But I'm out. I'm alone. I'm just walking around with my headphones on and just out in the fresh air. And I'm looking at, I do like very old items. I don't work with necessarily brand new items because I also am very into recycling and upcycling. And so I like to look at these things being sold at the flea market and potentially visualize what could be done for this. How can I make this into something more interesting and kind of rescue it in a way?
You are definitely rescuing stuff. So I love that your artist date with yourself every week is to go alone to a flea market. Are you always going to the same flea market or are you finding different flea markets in the area?
It's usually the same one because it's near my house. We do have a girl that comes in 3 or 4 times a week to be with Tucker in the morning for us. But this during the summer, she doesn't come on Fridays. And so I don't feel like I have a whole lot of time. So I go down there. And maybe I'm gone for about 2 hours and then I come back home. So it's not far, but it's
so nice.
Yeah. So it's still a place to go and get back and then fall back into the weekend routine of what we do with our son.
Do you go to estate sales?
No, I don't really do that. I'm not a big fan of having to wait outside and get a number and that's
yeah.
it around here. I'm just not into that. Anything where I have to wait too long, I'm like, not worth it.
Well, if you don't go right in the beginning of the day, you can just walk in. It's only right when they open that there's a line, really. Unless it's Well, maybe there's so much more population density where you live, which there is.
There is.
But here in Ohio, it's if you come like an hour after they open, you almost never have to wait. But it could be an Ohio thing.
Yeah, that's a good tip, though. I could look into that. And I'm very on the whim. If I'm driving home and all of a sudden I saw a sign for an estate sale, I might be like, oh, I'm going to go there real quick. So, yeah.
So I think you've given me an idea for getting myself out of the house more. There are lots of flea markets, and I haven't gone since COVID.
Yeah.
And part of the resistance that I have to going is I feel like I have purchased a lot of stuff. And
yeah, you have to be really choosy.
Yeah. At this point, I have to be so selective.
Yes. Because I'm the same way. I get it.
Yeah. So it looks like your creative space is your entire house and yard.
Yes, it is. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about that.
It's my canvas.
Okay. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, since I do create so much, that's pretty much what I do as my full-time job is just create. I have to be able to put it somewhere. I'm certainly not going to be able to sell everything that I'm making. And so, yeah, pretty much my house, my son's room. I kind of leave my husband's room alone so he can just have his own thing. But everywhere else in the house is definitely have been quichified or artified, as we call it.
Do people come tour your home? Because it definitely looks like something that could turn into a museum someday.
I've had people mention it. Like I said, though, I don't have a lot of people locally that I really know. But I've had people like, oh, my God, I so want to come there and walk around. And
it definitely looks like the whole thing is a museum. I definitely see that. Oh my gosh, your dolls are amazing. Sorry, I'm just looking through Keisha's Instagram as I talk because there's just so much inspiring art in here.
My favorite canvas when summer starts, though, is my backyard. And I've been on a little bit of a house arrest with my left hand since I found out that I have like severe arthritis in my thumb. And so we've been trying to calm down the inflammation. So I haven't been able to do a whole lot. But
tell me about this because I also feel like I have arthritis. So
I definitely started noticing it when I was doing any sort of hand stitching. And I am right-handed, but my left hand is considered my holding hand for everything.
Okay.
And so what I do when I'm slow stitching, though, is I'm really, I don't know why I do this, though. I'm gripping the fabric very tight, and I think that's to keep my stitches tight, but that gripping is very aggravating. And so I would notice how bad my hand hurt 3 or 4 days even after hand stitching. And so I haven't been hand stitching for a while, but I don't know what I did. All of a sudden, at the base of my thumb on the inside, right where your wrist meets your hand or your arm starts, it was becoming really sore there to the point where I would almost gasp, oh my God, that's hurting. And then I'd try to turn the doorknob and I'd be like, oh my God, that hurts so bad. So then I started to wear a hand splint. And then I forget what happened. Something happened. And I was like, okay, that's it. I'm going to have to go see a hand doctor because I was thinking maybe it was like carpal tunnel. I think that's why I finally said, I better go just check this out, get this dealt with. And then I was very sad when he was like, oh, no, it's arthritis. And he showed me my x-ray. And then we did a cortisone shot, which was extremely painful for 24 hours. And then after that, it's been feeling much better. And so I've been heating it and basically really trying to not do much with it. And it's starting to feel better. And so I'm just going to have to really pick and choose now what I'm going to do with that. And if I can't hand stitch anymore, or I don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
There's going to be
sick
battles. Yes. I did do a little hand stitching last night, my first hand stitching in quite a lot while. I did it just a little. And I tried something where I took one of my dog's toys, which is a flower. So it's soft and it's small. And I put it in my palm and then put my splint on so that I couldn't grip tight, if that makes sense, to see if that would sort of help. And so when I was done, I was like, I think that was kind of successful. So I'm just being mindful about how I'm using that hand, I guess.
Yeah. Are you noticing that the pain is a little bit less because you're being more mindful and you're laying off it and you're not doing as much?
It's lessening. I mean, definitely the cortisone shot was a big thing. And so I did that mainly so that I could give my time, my hand a quick jump to feeling better, but then also start to be extremely mindful about it. So I've been wearing, what's the word? I can't think of the word. When you wear gloves, pressure gloves, compression gloves. So I've been wearing,
really? Yeah.
So I've been wearing some compression gloves that you can wear during the day. And then I have a brace that I can wear at night. And then he is your friend with arthritis, not necessarily ice, but heat. So I have a little, those old paraffin wax things. Remember those? Those are actually really good for arthritic hands.
Hands in this.
Yeah, you dip your hands in heat, you melt the wax. So the paraffin wax, of course, it gets really hot and you just put your hands in there and get the wax on your hands and let it cool down. And so, but that heat is actually getting into your hands. And so I start that my morning off by doing that so that I can, it's almost like a stretch for your hands, but using the paraffin as a heat. And then taking some supplements like turmeric or glucosamine, which are good for your joints.
I think I need to start taking these supplements. I remember as a kid, all these TV commercials, glucosamine and chondroitin. And
yes.
I was like,
yeah.
But now it's, wait, why? Everything arthritis. I'm like, wait, what? What have I been doing my whole life?
Yeah, it's time. It's time. I'll text you later the two things to look for, because there's certain supplements that are in those fields that are better than others. So.
All right. I definitely need help. I just was on the phone last night with Lisa Young. She's an artist that lives in Alaska. And she was telling me about this product that she rubs on her legs for her arthritis. Sorry if I'm outing her as someone with arthritis.
Yeah. See, so in my Facebook,
help each other.
In my Facebook family, which I call them, I'll post something like, oh my God, I posted, I just got back from the doctor and I'm so sad that he said I have arthritis and blah, blah, blah. But then the tips come in. Have you tried this? Have you tried that? Someone recommended this really high quality CBD cream. So it's a great support system for resources, because I don't know a lot of this kind of stuff. So it's nice to
explore
what they're sharing.
Unless people share it with you about what works for them.
So, yeah, it is a nice little community that I have going on there.
Fascinating. All right. I'm going to jump to something else. Tell me about your work with Art Foamy. Start out by telling people what an Art Foamy is, because I just think that with these products, sometimes we can assume that, oh, anyone who's listening would know what this is.
Right.
But there's just so many products in the world of mixed media art that I never want to assume that anybody knows everything. So,
of course.
So Art Foamies is a company.
Yes, Art Foamy is a company owned by Kristen Powers, who is a very interesting artist as well. And basically, she takes an image and then carves it into foam. And then you can apply paint to the top of the foam and then stamp it. So it's in the stamping field, but it's on Art Foamy and very personalized.
Okay, so considering rubber stamps have been around for a very long time, what is the difference between a rubber stamp and an Art Foamy? And do you use them in different ways?
So pretty much rubber stamps, you are subject to what they want to, their collection. That's not the right word, but whatever they have. And it's pretty much standard and very commercialized, sort of say. So if you go to Hobby Lobby or Michael's, you're going to see the same stamps over and over again, right? Art Foamies is taking artists' work and creating unique collections geared more towards like the mixed media artists. So I feel like if I saw a bunch of rubber stamps at, say, Hobby Lobby, they would be geared more towards making cards.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not a lot of individuality to them.
So it's not that the use is so different. It's that the market that they're catering to is very different.
Yeah, I would say so. So yeah, so Kristen, she goes by KP. So KP has artists that design for her, and they're very unique artists who have their own art stuff going on Instagram and blah, blah, blah. But their stamps reflect this art. So someone really likes my doodles, then they can go pick up an Art Foamy that has a very similar doodle and now use it in their work. And they oftentimes, though, can be sized a lot bigger than what you would run into a rubber stamp at the store. so they can be.
Yes, because a very large rubber stamp would be very expensive, like very expensive. Right. So you can go way larger on a foamy without adding on like tremendous expense, probably.
Yes, she's made some of my, so one of my logos, Cool Archie Chick, and she made me like a huge foam stamp from Cool Archie Chick that I can make my make dolls out of. So that's really fun.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, and then also she does custom stamps too. So I know that you can chat with her and I don't know, maybe your grandkid doodled the cutest darn thing and you could send her the image and most likely she could make a stamp for you out of it.
So that's pretty amazing, meaning she can make one-offs. Like it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have 100 or 1,000 made.
No.
You can send her your art and she will make one foamy and send it back to you. And I believe, is it through Etsy that they sell that? I just recently got wind of this whole, you could have a foamy made for you personally.
Yeah.
It is. So it's on Etsy. It's Art Foamies on Etsy.
She's artfoamy.com. I think she's Etsy, but her main website is artfoamies.com.
Gotcha. That's really cool. So how did you meet them? How did you get hooked up with?
I've known KP for a long time, just as Facebook friends. She used to own Rubber Moon, which was a rubber stamp company.
Yeah.
And she did the same thing, though. Her directory of artists were handpicked that she worked with. And so she messaged me about something I had doodled and asked if I would make a little collection for her for something to sell. And so I did. And then she sold that company and bought Art Foamies and then got a hold of me again and said, I want you to start designing for me again. And so that sort of blossomed from there.
How often do you come out with a new collection of foamies?
Pretty much she's very laid back, which I love. Pretty much she'll be like, hey, you want to make some more foamies? And I'll be like, okay, can I have about a month to work on this? And she's like, yeah, it sounds good. So it's really whatever's going on in her life or my life, and we sort of make it work.
So is it fun when you see your image pop up in other artists' work?
Yeah. At first, it was an adjustment because I'm not used to commercial sales. I don't really sell my work commercially like that. So at first, it was an adjustment, and then I'm like, started really getting into when people tag me and it's really fun to see what they're doing. And some people do things that I'm like, oh my God, I would have never thought of that. That's so fun. So yeah, it is very fun. And the fact that people are excited about using it is what's even funner.
Gotcha. Because your illustrations are so personal. They are so you. And so it's like your art in someone else's art, which I'm sure some people are thrilled by and other people are shocked by having your art inside of someone else's art.
Yeah.
People have very different feelings about that, but you have to be okay with that in order to essentially license your designs for someone else to sell.
Yes, exactly. And at this point, since I'm not really able to have income coming in from going places to teach, I have to investigate other ways to have income because I don't work. I can't work with my child. So I have to explore options for income. And if that means starting to license stuff like that, then that's a choice I have to make that's good for me.
So go to Art Foamies and check out Keisha's things on Art Foamies because they're super, super cool.
Yeah, right now we're doing a whole Frida thing for her birthday in July when she would have been, not that she'd live that long, but 106 is her birthday this year. And so we're having like a Frida fest. And I think there's 9 artists all did Frida-inspired foamy stamps. And then at the end for her birthday, we're going to have a little fiesta online and people can show us their work. And
so that's really perfectly in line with where your heart is because didn't Frida work in Mexico?
Yes. I've actually toured her home, which was just so amazing. And
did she decorate her entire home with art or...
Well, I mean, back then, I don't think they really did that. It definitely had a very artistic flair to it. And also, it's more museum setting now. So I'm not sure how much was moved or changed or manufactured to have this presentation. But I also got to see her wardrobe, though, when it came through New York City on that tour. And just absolutely stunning. So, I mean, she even dressed artistic. So,
wow.
Yeah, I would think that her home back in the day was very influenced by her sort of, I would call her eclectic as well. So she had that sort of eclectic presentation in all things that she did. So
very cool. Tell us about the project that you're going to be making for your fodder school project, because that is very three-dimensional and that is very extra and that is very more and that could involve all sorts of collections that people have and going to flea markets and finding junk, someone else's trash that becomes your treasure. Tell us about what your plan is for Fodder School 3.
Yeah. So, I mean, you saw some of the videos. You saw how extra I went. I can't help myself. It's just, I'm just that extra person.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Well, I got a freak flag.
Yes, exactly. So we are going to be making a hanging art journal is what I like to call it. And so the journal itself is vertical, hangs down, hanging off a stick. And we're upcycling all our stuff for the inside of our book, which I love. Junk mail and cardboard and old papers, whatever we have sitting around, not doing anything. And then we're going to be creating what I call a swag that's going to hang off the stick and accompany the art journal. So we just brought the art journal from like this thing hanging on the wall to this, whoa, what's going on with that? And so the swag, a swag to me is something that you can sort of hang up, but then also hang anything else you want on it. So we're going to be creating these swags from found objects and other things that I show how to create, and then very dimensional. And then I give tips on how to add texture, how to give it fullness, what to do. Like I said earlier, I don't really like things flat. So it's all about poofing it up and making it, what's the word they use now? Bougie? Making it bougie.
Yes. Yeah. The mixed media version of bougie.
Yeah. I'm just never content. Less is more. No. More is more
for
to
you.
Me.
More is more.
Yeah.
For you.
More is more to me. You don't have to be more is more. You don't have to be extra. You can go your own thing. But I definitely show you how to be more is more. But also at the same time, though, thinking about balance and composition and making it so that it's not necessarily random. It's more purposeful. That makes sense.
I'm so excited. Having this conversation with you, I'm able to connect with you in a totally different way.
Good.
And understand your art in a different way. And the fact that I have Instagram here to look at while we're talking, it's like your project has taken on a completely new life for me.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to take all the junk that I love that means something to me.
Right.
And have a place for it. And then I can completely imagine hanging this on a prominent wall in my home.
Yeah.
It's going to be maybe going to be the coolest thing I will ever imagine to me.
I love to watch people, though, transition from flat to dimensional, though, because I don't know, for some reason, it's a little scary to people. But maybe it's because they just feel like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm happy to be like giving my tips on how to make that transition, because I think once your eyes open to dimension, it's going to change how you work in other areas, though. You might go back to watercolor and be like, you know what? I feel like I want to do this now. I don't know. It just sort of opens your eyes to not limiting yourself to something.
Yeah, to two dimensions. I think this is going to be really freaking fun. And I am so excited. Wow.
The other thing I love about this project, though, too, is we, of course, we love to save all of our stuff. God forbid we get rid of anything. But, this earring, I lost the other one, but I love this earring. And now it's just sitting in my interior box. And it's just so fun to hang up stuff that we love, but just can't part with. And now it's a part of something, an art piece that we brought to life.
And has meaning to us.
Yeah. All that stuff that for some reason is very meaningful.
I have a lot of those earrings.
Yeah.
I would want to put on here.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to mention while we're recording? Or are you ready to go have an artsy-fartsy day?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything. I certainly have enjoyed discussing myself. Usually I'm a little shy about it, but it's been very fun to answer your interesting questions and realize things about myself as I'm talking.
Good. That's my goal. I had this idea that I was going to call my podcast The Armchair Therapist. Have you ever heard the term armchair therapist? Like someone is an armchair therapist. I think what that means is they're not really a therapist, but they like love to pretend they are.
Yes. Your go-to person. Yeah.
Right. So I thought I would name this podcast Armchair Therapist instead of Armchair Therapist because
I love it.
It's, I mean, definitely a passion of mine is diving really deep into the psychology of why we create and how we create and all the psychological stuff that comes along with being someone who's so driven to create. Yeah. So I'm not at all surprised that you're like, well, I talked about things I wasn't expecting to talk about and explored things on a deep level because that's my goal and that's what I like to do. And that's part of why I like to create and do it in community with other people.
Yeah. My go-to armchair therapist, I won't name him, but he's a prominent mixed media artist. And we both use each other for this exact reason. And it's awesome. We have a great chat going about things. And it's a great sounding board because we do need that for balance as far as am I overreacting or.
Yes.
I like that you said that to them in response to what happened to you or whatever. It's a very nice dialogue and it's very nice to have.
It's essential to have. Right. Because we will overreact to tons of stuff, unless there's somebody presenting a non-triggered perspective.
Yes. And so I have a psychology degree and so does he. And we both know how to look at things in perspective. And so that's why it's such a nice sounding board, because we present it in a way that we already know how to look at things in a non-reactive way. And I'll just say, hey, I just want to share this. And then I'll present my thoughts on how whatever went down. And he'll be like, oh, my God, absolutely. And blah, 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 and blah, whatever. So it is very nice.
Actually, there is one more thing I want to talk to you before I let you off. Sure. So I do know that you do have another friend that you do hang out with live and in person sometimes. And
yes.
That is a mutual friend that we have, which is Megan Quinlan.
So yes.
How did you meet Megan?
That's a good question. I'm one of those people, I have no idea how we came together, but I'm sure it was on Instagram and maybe someone posted something that, oh, at Megan Quinlan. And I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. I'm going to click on her name. And I clicked on her name. And I don't know if it's on her Instagram where you know, her town is, but somehow I began to realize she lived like 20 minutes from me. And so I messaged her. I'm like, did you know you're like, we're like 20 minutes apart from each other? And so then we were like, oh my God, get out of here. That's ridiculous. And we didn't know that. So we just sort of went from there. And then I've gone to her house for things during COVID. I would drop off things. We would have quick little chats of things we were doing. She's come here to the house. And we're doing the Frida art foamy thing together. So she came here and we made Frida dolls with our stamps, which was really fun. And then we decided to go to the mall and make one of those do your own pottery sessions. I don't know what those places are called, but I thought that would be fun and different. So we went and did that. That was really fun. And then, so the next thing we want to try together, which is going to probably be a disaster for me, is roller skating.
But roller skating.
Yeah, yeah. I have my own roller skates and I got them for Christmas a couple of years ago and I put them on and immediately had a bad fall, which is hilarious. Fractured my finger. So I've been a little nervous to do it. But now that there's a rink open down by her house, I'm like, let's try it. Let's do it. So that's in the works. Get together and do that.
I think that's so beautiful that you have a friend who also shares the same passions that you're doing, like like you're going to go roller skating together. That's not you're not sitting there making art together. You're just going to go do fun stuff together.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing for an adult.
I did changing it up a little bit when we went to the mall and did the ceramic painting because we could be artsy at the same time, but doing something different and outside of the house.
Yeah. I need something to draw me outside of my house.
Yeah,
I love my house
that's
so
it.
Much. Yeah, I need to be drawn out. And in fact, I'm going to be drawn out today and tomorrow, because tomorrow night I'm going to a wedding. So I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Okay, get me out of my element. I need to be gotten out.
I mean, there's been times where I realized I haven't left my house in 2.5 weeks. That's awful. Because you do need to, especially when you're a full-time caregiver, you do need to walk away. And sometimes we just forget. And it's, oh my God, I just need to go somewhere. Even if I just drive to the beach, I just forget. The beach is 7 miles from here. Go to the freaking beach. What are you doing?
That's amazing that you live 7 miles from the beach.
And I never get down there. So wow. It's ridiculous. I know my husband left the other day. He was really frustrated with something. And he's, I'm going to go for a drive. I'm like, yeah, hit the beach because you can breathe that nice salt air.
And you get so much perspective by looking at the ocean.
It's yeah, like, and there's, it's therapeutic.
Yep. It's complete. Just to look at it, hear it, smell it.
Yes.
It's a really good thing.
Yeah. I like to take like a breakfast sandwich down there and coffee, open the window and just chill.
All right, Keisha, it's been a pleasure. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
And that you do something fun and you can get out of your house at some point this weekend.
Yeah, right now I'm painting some pants, which is going to be fun. I'm altering these overalls. I'm actually going on a trip soon. I forgot to say that. I'm going to go see my sister soon in California, and we're going to San Diego to take a 2-day class with this artist that I met years ago. And I'm very excited about it. And so I'm like, I'm going to get out my little overalls that I always take on trips and add something to it. So kind of a tradition.
That's awesome. You're going to San Diego and you're taking an art class and you're going to be with your sister. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. 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 It's coming up quick. So I got to get my ducks in a row.
All right. Have fun.
I will.
And I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye, Keisha.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Show Up or Shut Up podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast and leave a rating and review. And once again, you can find me, Wendy, free gifts for newsletter subscribers, online classes with me and many other incredible instructors, my blog, and everything else at willowwanders.com and on Instagram at willa.wanders. Talk to you soon. Until then, stay curious and keep making.